incredible! Argentina no puede el mundo!
A near supernatural goal from Lionel Messi.
Ronaldinho takes and David Seaman's cut off his line. And Brazil take the lead.
Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into Destination 2026 on ESPN 97.5. I'm Glenn Davis. We're talking the FIFA World Cup. 225 days till our great city of Houston will host 7 World Cup matches over at Energy Stadium. Throughout the tournament, we've got 7 games, and the eyes of the world will be on us here in Houston, Texas, on our culture, our passion, and our welcoming nature, as 500,000 to 750,000 people will descend on Houston, and we'll figure out who those teams will be come December when the draw is done. And I've got some exciting news on that as well. The draw will take place, obviously, in Washington, D.C., and that'll be when we find out what teams are coming here and what fan bases will be descending on Houston. Destination 2026 is brought to you by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy, Quanta, Visit Sugarland, and Aramco. Now, what a pleasure it is each and every week to talk World Cup, both on this show, Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup, and also on Soccer Matters, which, by the way, is every Tuesday night at 6 Central Time. FWC26Houston.com. FWC26Houston.com. By the way, that's where you get merchandise, volunteer information, tickets, and additional information from the Houston Committee about what's going on with the World Cup. So you got a lot of great sources, and each and every week we've got 3 hours of soccer talk, and rest assured, a lot of it is going to be around what's going on with the World Cup here in Houston in the coming months. So stick with us here on ESPN 97.5. You're home of soccer in Houston, and it's been the home of soccer for quite some time. Nobody rivals us in Houston, Texas, when it comes to coverage. That's a little self-promotion. All right, tonight, former U.S. midfielder Tab Ramos is going to join us in an interview done earlier in the week. Now, Ramos played in 3 World Cups for the United States, also was an assistant to Jurgen Klinsmann on the U.S. coaching staff, and he was added 3 months to that staff, by the way, by Klinsmann before the 2014 World Cup, replacing Martin Vazquez. Additionally, and I think this is really interesting since we just had an under-20 World Cup, and we saw Morocco win it, and we saw a very good U.S. team, frankly. Well, he coached the under-20 national team in 4 cycles, and he actually witnessed what was a national team with college players and then a national team that moved forward to having full-blown pros on their team. On his team at the under-20 level. So it's a very, very interesting interview. Now, let me tell you a little bit more about him. He played in 3 World Cup, Tab Ramos, starter for the national team in 94 in all those matches. Now, if you remember, Tab Ramos, in the round of 16 against Brazil, and I think that was in the Rose Bowl, suffered a skull fracture, got elbowed in the head by Leonardo in the first half of the game. It resulted in a straight red for Leonardo. The U.S. couldn't break down Brazil and were eliminated on a goal by Bebeto. And if you remember, Bebeto and Romario were the two guys up front for Brazil that led them to that World Cup title in 1994 here in the U.S. The final in the Rose Bowl, they defeated Italy on penalty kicks. By the way, on the bench was an 18-year-old, the legendary Ronaldo, the real Ronaldo, who they brought essentially to that World Cup just to kind of, Brazil wanted to get him the experience of being in it. But Tab Ramos was in the hospital for a few weeks, where he was then visited by Leonardo. 1995, he was a part of the team that ended up in fourth place in the Copa America. The goal that sticks out to me that Tab scored, and I don't know why, but this is the one that sticks out. It was a very important goal. It was against Costa Rica. September 7th, 1997, the U.S. would beat Costa Rica 1-0. I believe that was in Portland. And that was an assist from Marcelo Balboa on the end line. Tab would be on the 98 team as well, playing in his third World Cup. He had played prior in the 90 World Cup, which essentially was college players. And by the way, Tab Ramos did 4 years in college at North Carolina State. So it was very different. Very, very different back then. The college game was where everybody went. So there you go. He made his last national team appearance in 2000. It was a U.S. 4-0 win against Barbados. 2 days later, he announced his retirement. He ended his career with 81 caps and 8 goals. So this is an interview you're really going to want to like to listen to, because I take him into Mauricio Pochettino, where he thinks Pochettino is currently. I take him into the national team, some strengths and weaknesses. We talk some players. And then we also talked the U.S. youth national team, the under-20s, in their recent World Cup that was held down in Chile with a lot of young talent. I actually thought Marko Mitrovic, the coach of that team, did an exceptional job. It seemed like a very put-together group that were tied together and were playing for each other, playing for a coach, and most importantly, playing for their country. So that was a good World Cup. And I actually thought in the second half of the Morocco game, which they ended up losing, they were really taking the game to Morocco. And you've heard me talk about Morocco on the show and where that country is from the standpoint of investment in soccer and taking itself next level. And they're going to be one of the teams that has to be watched in the 2026 World Cup, which will be here in Houston, Texas for 7 games. 6 of those games will take place in June. 5 are group stage, then you're going to have a round of 32 game in June. And then you will have on July 4th. And I know a lot of people have been coming up to me really saying they want to go to that July 4th game. And look, the other thing you got to remember is you might have the World Cup champion. Maybe that team's path comes through Houston, Texas in this. FWC26Houston.com for merchandise, volunteer information, news, and tickets as well. LSSE.net also for tickets. So the Tab Ramos interview is coming up. But what I want to do right now is, and what I want to start you off with, is a little local history that ties us to the World Cup that really is amazing. And I want you to really think about this while I'm telling you this story. This does remind us how far back it goes to soccer in this city at the professional level. And by the way, we had a professional team in the 60s called the Houston Stars. My great friend Basilis Sefidis was on that team and has been a great contributor to our Houston soccer community. The Houston Stars played here in the Astrodome in the 60s. So I'm taking you into a legendary match that took place in 1967. Real Madrid taking on West Ham United. Now, this match was the first indoors in the United States, the legendary eighth wonder of the world, the Houston Astrodome. This was West Ham United against Real Madrid. Now, the Astrodome at the time was a perfect fit for Houston, with its reputation being at the forefront of engineering in the 60s, space, of course, the headquarters of NASA, and the rapidly developing U.S. space program, which, you know, is a prideful source here in and around our city. Where does it tie into the World Cup, Glenn? Well, here's where it ties in. In 1967, this game was taking place. In 1966, the World Cup was hosted by England. England lifted their only World Cup title and that was a victory over West Germany. So this match was significant, yes, because it was the first ever game in the Astrodome, but it was significant because three of the players that won the World Cup the year prior in 66 were on the West Ham United team that played Real Madrid that day. Bobby Moore was the captain of England when they raised the World Cup. He was there for the Hammers. Jeff Hurst, the legendary striker, who in the World Cup final hit for a hat trick. Okay, first to hit for a hat trick against West Germany. And then let's not forget Martin Peters, also an exceptional player who was in that 1966 World Cup winning squad. So those three guys are here in Houston. They're playing for West Ham. And 1 year earlier, in a legendary fashion, lifted the World Cup. Now, England has already qualified for the 2026 World Cup. And I'm waiting to hear when we'll start hearing it's coming home. But England will be a team that has to be respected in this upcoming World Cup in 2026. Tremendous youth on that squad. Obviously, you got the legendary Harry Kane up front, who to me is one of the most humble soccer players you're ever going to find. Okay, so back to this day in the Astrodome. Real Madrid won the game 3-2. There was 33,351 people there. They were treated to three goals in the opening 9 minutes, but Real Madrid would win this. And this is a great piece of history for everybody to know, because we have not done as good a job as we should have, and I aim to try and help that when it comes to telling the history of the sport here at the professional level, at a lot of levels. So many people have contributed to the soccer community, both in high-profile matters and also behind the scenes that don't get the pat on the back that they really deserve. And that is the reason why we got the World Cup here. Attendance at energy and just this incredibly passionate soccer community with history and with people from all over the world. And as we all know, the most inclusive sport on the planet is soccer. Doesn't need any help. But anyway, that's a remarkable story. First ever game in the Astrodome, Real Madrid 3-2. They play against West Ham, whose squad includes the captain, Bobby Moore of England, who lifted the World Cup, Jeff Hurst, and Martin Peters. So there you go. We went back into the time capsule for that one. That's remarkable history. And in upcoming shows, I'm going to take you into a little bit more about Pelé playing in the Astrodome, Pelé's visits to Houston when he came for a UNICEF game in the 80s, when the Houston Dynamos, plural with an S, were taking on the San Jose Earthquakes. And there were remarkable things that happened during Pelé's visit that time, including getting around the community here in Houston, Texas, with the owners of that team, John Gaughan and Pete Kane. All right, couple of things to remind you of. Once again, really, really fun event. The guy driving this is Battiri. Battiri and I have been working on this, but I'm telling you, he's the guy who executes. It's called Monday Night Football. Football. Not the American version, soccer version. Monday Night Football. Gole film. This one is about the 1982 World Cup. This is when Italy wins the World Cup. The legendary performance from Paolo Rossi. West Germany has Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. Their stars galore in this World Cup. Marco Tardelli scored that, identifiable, indelible goal where he's pumping his fists straight in front of him. Italy wins that tournament. By the way, Paolo Rossi did not play did not score in the opening rounds. All his goals came in the knockout stages, which is incredible. He goes on to be the player of the tournament. He goes on to be the top goal scorer as well. Again, tickets and information about the upcoming World Cup, FWC26Houston.com. Also tickets, LSSE.net. Don't forget that. This is going to be a place for you. It's a go-to when it comes to World Cup information right here, Destination 2026. We're going to talk history, connection. We're going to continue to bring players on. And then you can hit me up for both the shows, Soccer Matters and Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup, Twitter, at Glenn Davis Soc, at Soccer Matters GD. Soccer Matters on YouTube. And you can also hit me up on Instagram at Glenn Davis Soc and Soccer Matters GD. Okay, so there's some of the promotion. Connect, speak about your game, talk to like-minded individuals that love it. We got something special coming our way. I hope we're ready for it. We're trying to create awareness for it. More people need to be aware of what's coming because it is a big, big moment in Houston sports history, in Houston culture, as a city, and we're here to tell you about it. There you go. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Todd Ramos as we go to break again. At Glenn Davis Soc on Twitter, at Soccer Matters GD on Twitter, which is now called X. Same thing on Instagram, and also FWC26Houston.com and LSSC.net. Let's take a break. We'll come back with the former Houston Dynamo coach, three-time World Cup participant, Todd Ramos.
You're listening to Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Destination 2026, brought to you by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Quanta Energy, Visit Sugarland, and Aramco as we continue here tonight. All right, part one here is going to be with Todd Ramos. Now, he took the U.S. under-20s in four different cycles. Tab and I will talk United States national team under-20, but we will also talk U.S. men's national team as we prepare for World Cup 2026. And of course, we've got seven games right here in Houston, Texas, five in the group stages and two in the knockout stages. All right, here's part one with Todd Ramos. Todd, thanks for coming on as usual.
Thank you for having me on. My pleasure to be here.
All right. So I know you don't miss the Houston weather very much.
Sometimes I do. It started to get to the time of the year when I do start to miss it.
Yeah, if you begin to shovel snow this December, then you'll wish you were back in Houston, right?
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Let's start off with, I want to remind my listeners, Todd Ramos has taken the U.S. under-20 national team in four cycles, has gotten them to the quarterfinals a number of times. So we're talking U.S. 20 national team, the performance under Marko Mitrovic. How about some just general observations from their overall under 20 tournament in Chile?
Yeah, overall it was very good. I thought the team gelled well. I thought they had a clear structure, way to play. They were comfortable on the ball for most of the tournament. And you could tell that the coach gave the players enough confidence to be able to play out of the back and to build play, which is really what you want, in particular for your younger teams.
France, Italy, got results against them. You might have timed those good because I know France was a little bit disturbed coming into the tournament, how quickly had to come in. They missed a few guys, but still, these are pretty historic results, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and you know, when you talk about missing a few guys, you know, that's the thing about the under 20 World Cup. All the teams are missing a few guys. You know, there's no one has a complete team, including us. You know, there's always, I think in every World Cup, we're always missing one or two players that could have made us better. But it kind of puts you on the same page with everyone else.
So the dynamics of coaching the under 20 players, there's still a level there where they are, I got to use the right word here, manageable, right? Like they're not full blown pros yet. They're still trying to make their mark. So as a coach, you do still have a lot of strength over them as far as the mission for them to move on in their careers.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think I was able to coach a unique period, because my first cycle with the under 20s, I had basically all college players. And by my second cycle, I had, you know, a lot of professional players. By the third cycle, I think it was only the only college players were the two goalkeepers. And then by the fourth cycle, everyone was professional. So I saw sort of the whole development. I think the one thing that never changed is the fact that, you know, the players are young. In particular, as we were getting better, we were utilizing players that were likely 2 years younger than the age group. And I think they all have the dreams of becoming, you know, great professional players and having long professional careers. And you know, you use that as part of the motivation. You're always talking to the players about how they should do today something that their future selves are going to thank them for. And they believe that. And they believe that because it's true. You have to lay the groundwork when you're young, and you have to work hard when you're young so that you can have that that same intensity and that same consistency when you're an adult and you become a true professional player.
Former under 20 national team coach Tab Ramos, also a full national team player, as we know through history. Did your man management skills change? Because that was incredible what you just said about the progress of the type of player that you were receiving as the coach of the under 20 national team. So did their demeanors change? Did their confidence change? Did they challenge a coach more as you climbed towards full-time pros being on the under 20 national team?
I would say at times, because obviously there are players who are starting for professional teams by the last couple cycles, and you can sense a little bit of entitlement, you know, with some players as they come from their professional team and they're playing every game. But I would say very little, to be honest, because the one thing that's a common denominator for the American player I found through my four cycles coaching them was that they'll do anything for you. You know, they want the team to succeed and they're not selfish. They want to do well as a team. I think that's why, likely, without changing the subject, why I had been surprised with the senior national team for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, because I always felt like, wow, that common denominator is always the American player always goes as hard as they can and they will literally run through the wall for you.
So where does the truth lie in that? In the middle somewhere? I mean, is it on the players? Is it on the coach? Is it on both? I mean, I'm sure it's probably in the middle somewhere.
Well, that part I don't know, because it's, you know, it's obviously always easy to coach someone else's team, so you can start blaming the players or the coach or whatever. But unless you're there, you don't know the challenges that each coach has, because each coach is sort of a little bit more in the personal life of the players. I think maybe it's changed a little bit with Pochettino being there, because I think he doesn't seem to be that type of coach that gets so much into the personal side of the players. But every coach is different. So I would say it's hard to judge where that deficiency lies, let's say.
Tab, from your perspective, has Mauricio Pochettino been a little bit misunderstood, or is it a cultural difference that the American fan and media maybe doesn't get when it comes to an Argentine coach? Well, how do you feel about that?
No, I feel like it's very simple. You know, we hired a coach about 14, 15 months ago now, and we expect results. This is not like soccer is not just born here, you know, and sometimes I think, you know, when we heard, you know, on some of the press conferences about how soccer is going to be so much bigger down the road and about how soccer is just growing and how we're arriving, you know, we started to hear things that we were hearing back in the 80s and 90s. You know, like soccer has been here for a long time. We need results. That's what we're about. So I don't think there's been any kind of misunderstanding. I think from a former player standpoint and from a fan standpoint, we want to see the team win, and then likely after we see the team win, we'd like to see the team play well. I mean, I think we're all on the same page. I don't think there's any misunderstanding, but, you know, frankly, until this last window, we hadn't done either.
Tab Ramos joining us, former U.S. men's national team player. Just more on Pochettino. Okay, so now we have a couple of results. It's calmed everybody down. There's been some good performances. Some players are coming back into the team. There's still some question marks in certain areas. Do you really have to? And I hear this a lot from fans. Well, we need our best 11 out there, but I mean, through injury, through people not playing in certain tournaments, is that even possible coming to this World Cup? Do you think we should be seeing what looks more like what might be on the field in 2026 in the United States? Do we need to be seeing that now?
Well, I always feel like the national team is in particular from a fan standpoint, the national team, you always want to see your best players on the field. That's what the national team is for. I don't think it's for trials. I don't think it's for long-term projects. I think it's for the national team is for, at least the way I see it, the national team is for winning today. And of course you're building towards something. But that doesn't mean that you're leaving the winning aside. The winning is always important. And I think the winning should always be the common denominator. So for example, on this last camp that we had, I thought that it was the first time the U.S. team looked like a U.S. team, you know, so I thought we played the intensity that we had against Ecuador, the desire that we showed against Ecuador. And by the way, a team who did great in South America, is a legit great team, high pressures. We played every bit as fast as they played. And I thought that was really impressive from our end. And I thought it was a great game. And by the way, one that we deserved to win. We didn't get the win, but I think we all understand that. When we see the team playing that way, we all can understand and we all can be happy with a tie in that game. And then we play the second game against Australia and we didn't play well. It was a little bit boring. It was, you know, it was... Yeah, we all saw the same thing, but we won, and that matters. And I think when you win, you can continue to move forward. So I thought it was an excellent camp. I look at both games. I'll take it as a yes, great job on the last camp, one great tie against Ecuador, and one good win against Australia.
I like your point about Ecuador, too, because they ended up second in CONMEBOL in World Cup qualifying. So a good comment there. So in the mind of Pochettino, where do you think he is right now? Is he still in a – slightly in an assessment phase? Do you think he's pretty clear on the entire roster? Are there some guys on the bubble? I mean, I think Christian Roldan played very well. Where does Malik Tillman sit? What do you think? Is he still assessing?
Yeah, I mean, that's to me, that's what it sounds like. You know, every camp is different. The one that I think the most positive that I can see is that when we played that second game of the last window against, I think it was Japan, and we played three center backs, you know, so you can call it five in the back or three in the back, either one, right? Depending on how much you want to attack. But I think he changed into the five, and I thought that was very smart, because if there's one place where we are not showing to be decisive right now, it's unfortunately right that middle of the team, right? So you have the goalkeeper, your center backs, your center mid, and that needs to be tight. And I think by adding an extra center back, I think it assures us to be able to defend a little bit better. And what I like most is that we went into the next camp, which was this one, and he kept that. And I think I'd like to see that, because although we don't know exactly who the three center backs are going to be, I think we're much better with the three, knowing that we can potentially have Dest wide on one side and Jedi wide on the other side.
Yeah, two guys that you can build the game through. And the three-back system in your mind, does that make that maybe can help some of the athletic deficiencies of a great center back in Tim Ream, who's getting towards the end of his career? Three backs may be able to maybe kind of disguise some of that a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt less, let's say, exposure, right? Because, you know, at times in particular, because we're a team whose outside backs like to attack. So, and in particular, on the left side with Robinson, although Robinson and Ream have played together for a long time, I think it leaves Ream on the left side exposed a lot when Robinson attacks. And I think by having three, it limits that exposure. And I think that helps.
So I'm thinking you're saying put Tim Ream in the middle of two athletic guys on his right and left.
What I've been saying all along is that I'm not sure Ream is the guy in the World Cup. I think that's remains to be determined. That's a lot of months away, and he's an older player. Yeah. But if Ream ends up being the player, he could potentially do either one. With having three in the back, he could potentially be in the center or be on the left.
Yeah, and I think we forget that too, right? There's a lot of time. There's form in your league play, potential injuries. There's still a lot of time before the World Cup arrives. And I hear people saying, well, he's made the team. I mean, I'm kind of like, yeah, with an asterisk next to it, maybe.
Yeah, no doubt. But this has been going on, you know, and at the end of the day, we have to talk about something. So that's what happens. You know, I mean, we started talking about the 26 World Cup back in 2019. You know, this is the generation that's going to get us to, you know, 2026. And I'm sitting there recognizing and knowing young players and thinking, half these guys won't be on the team in 2026. I don't know what we're doing. You don't build a team for 7 years. That's never going to happen. So it's the same now. I think it'll depend on the form in their club as we get closer to the World Cup.
Tab Ramos joining us here tonight, Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. To that point, there is a base of guys who have gone through a World Cup, and that's got to be very healthy for Mauricio Pochettino.
No doubt. I think the experience is tremendously helpful. You know, after missing the 2018 World Cup, we were able to go to 22, and a lot of these players participated in that World Cup, and that's going to come in handy because they know that at the World Cup, you can't really make a mistake. You make a mistake in the first round, it already takes you out of the possibility of getting a good second round game. In a best case, you're looking at playing at one of the powerhouses right off the bat. So I think that experience will be helpful.
So a player like Malik Tillman, in the absence of others, he was able to kind of jump up in the CONCACAF Gold Cup, showed a lot of good things, maybe established himself more to people from the standpoint of trust and confidence. Would you agree with that? Granted, it was CONCACAF competition. It wasn't the Netherlands and Germany, but it seemed like that tournament in some ways was helpful to other players.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Tillman made the most of his opportunities. I thought maybe the first window in September, he didn't do as well as we expected. But overall, I think he put himself in position to potentially be a starter, depending on how people look at the lineup. I mean, I think he's there. He's, fighting for a starting position. So he put himself, I think, in good position to be a key player for us next summer.
All right, let's take a break now. That's part one with Tab Ramos. And again, we remind you, so much going on in the world of soccer as we prepare for World Cup 2026 here in Houston. You can hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Davis Sock, at Soccer Matters GD. And we will take a break. We will come back with part two of Tab Ramos.
Is Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Destination 2026, presented by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy, Quanta, Visit Sugarland, and Aramco. We appreciate their support of Soccer Talk, and of course, the support of the World Cup 2026 coming to Houston. Now, by the way, for merchandise information about volunteers, FWC26Houston.com. That's FWC26Houston.com. Merchandise information, you can get it there, FWC26Houston.com. You can also get it on Instagram and Twitter at Glenn Davis Sock, at Soccer Matters GD. Okay, here is part two, our final segment of the night with former U.S. men's national team player, former under 20 U.S. national team coach, Tab Ramos. Where do you see Tim Weah? Do you see him higher up the field, or he's been used in his club play sometimes as an outside back on the right side and the left?
Yeah, so Tim is, I think, a very dangerous player up top in the final third. And I think we have to figure out ways to get him there, right? If you saw in the last camp, Pochettino used him on the left side, wide on the left side. We've used him wide on the right side. We've used him as sort of a second striker. We've used him as kind of like an outside back. I mean, it's hard. It's hard with Tim because he's so athletic that you want to throw him in any position. But at the end of the day, I think the position where he can be most dangerous is likely, for me, wide left as a winger. And we're likely not going to play with two wingers wide. So I'm not sure where would fill in at this point.
Is it a necessity to play with the inverted wingers in the modern game now to you? Based on when you lose the ball, everybody's centralized and can put immediate pressure on it.
Not necessarily. I'm a fan of having wingers with their strong foot on the outside.
I knew you were going to say that, but yeah. I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Yeah, I like the wingers that get down the line and get into the box on their strong foot. But yeah, it depends. That depends on the coach. That's only from a standpoint that I look at both the attack and the high press afterwards. I like to have players with the proper foot there, but it doesn't really matter. I think the reason I say that about Weah playing on the left side is because when we had him on the under-20s, I liked using him wide left because he made the diagonal runs inside behind the defenders. And so he usually ended up on his strong foot anyway. But he's incredibly fast and he has great timing on his runs, which is key, which is I think one of the things that Balogun has that makes him a little different as well.
And balls on the far side of the field, defenders are looking at it, and Weah is making that diagonal coming into the box from the left side of the field. Makes sense, right?
Yeah, he's very dangerous in that position. And by this, I don't mean that he couldn't do just as well in others. I just think that that's a good position for him. But he certainly benefits, I believe, from having two wingers who are wide. And we don't necessarily play that way. And I think that maybe hurts his game a little bit.
All right, Weston McKennie, how important is it for him to be a part of this team and bring that energy that we've seen when he's at his best to a U.S. national team midfield?
I think very important. I think he played a good role in this last camp, did well, I thought, in the Ecuador game, which was an extremely difficult game. And although, you know, I did see on some of the comments that people were disappointed with him to a certain extent, but I certainly was not. I thought he played a very strong game in a, against a very, like I said, a very tough team. You know, the two teams that we played in that window were completely different. And I felt like anything you did against Ecuador really counts for me, because that's certainly it's going to be a top World Cup team. And I think he did well, and I think we need him on the field.
Yeah, and that bar continues to stay high with Paraguay and Uruguay next. So that's nice to know that you got that type of competition. So we got some competition at the striker position out of this too, which is great, right? Baller and Balogun?
Yeah, I mean, Balogun and Haji Wright in this case, right? So Haji did well. I mean, he took advantage of his opportunity. He got an opportunity and he took it. But let's not forget that Balogun also did well. I mean, he played against Ecuador, did well. I mean, he's likely, that it's debatable, but he's likely been our best player, you know, I think pretty much the whole year. And he's really worked into his position of being our number nine. I think it's great that we went from having a problem of not knowing who our nine was because they just were not good enough to having a good problem now, in which I think we have not just those two, but I would put Pepe in the fight as well, because, you know, Pepe's just coming back from an injury. And he'll have some ups and downs over the next couple months. But I think when it's all said and done, he'll be fighting for a position as well.
Fascinating stuff. We could keep – well, I'll ask you one more before we go. We all know that goalkeeping is a place where you can win or lose a game or position yourself to win games. Would you be concerned starting a goalkeeper like Matt Friis in a World Cup who's never played in one? And really our only other option would be Matt Turner.
I would not be concerned because, you know, at the end of the day, these guys are used to playing big games. So I think he's going to be okay. I think the main concern is that we sort of don't have a clear cut number one. I mean, obviously Friis is that right now. I think he's doing a great job. He's taking advantage of his opportunities, but maybe because I come from a generation of seeing not just my generations, but the generations after also of just having great goalkeepers who constantly bailed us out. And I think we're not at that level right now.
Boy, yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking of the names. Friedel, Keller, Tony Miola was a great goalkeeper. Who did I miss?
Howard.
Missed Tim Howard. Yeah, I knew I missed one big
But then there was others that never played. Jürgen Sommer. There were tons of other goalkeepers who never got a shot who I think were great goalkeepers as well.
He had Marcus Hanneman in and around it. Yeah, you're right. That was a tough time to be an excellent goalkeeper with all those guys making the position their own, that's for sure. Well, Tab, last one before I let you go. Just, you know, as we get closer and closer to the World Cup, and obviously we're hosting down here in Houston, we have crazy, insatiable fans from all over the world in this city, as you know. But, you know, some thoughts from you as we get closer and closer to it as a guy that has performed in it.
Thoughts in general, I would say if you were asking me about the favorites or, you know, I obviously Argentina, I think, is playing better likely than they were when they won the World Cup. You know, they kind of struggled through it and won the World Cup. I think now they're a better team than they were at that point. I think certainly Spain is probably the team that plays the best, but let's hold on to Spain a little bit now with, you know, Lamine Yamal and Carvajal and see if they have, you know, any internal issues with the Clásicos ending the way they do and the things they talk about. You know, let's see if Spain doesn't implode, I think they're the team to beat. But I mean, how can you bet against France also, right? Because they have amazing players in England as well. I would have the World Cup, I see it there.
I think Lamine's becoming, according to my friends in Barcelona, a bit of a problem child right now, a little bit hard to rein in right now. And you kind of see it in the way he played in the Clásico over the weekend. What about Morocco? Morocco's an incredible story. They won the Under-20 World Cup. Their senior team was the first team from Africa and an Arab country to get to a semifinal in Qatar. I did a little research on them. And, you know, this isn't by accident. This is a lot of investment, a lot of wise choices, a lot of great coaches, and it was a collaboration to really improve their standing in world football.
Well, I think, you know, it starts with culture like everything else. You know, it's a country that loves football. They love it. You know, the fans love it. The players love it. You can tell by the passion with which they play the game. And I think that's the number one ingredient. That is the number one ingredient. There's no investment. There's no analytics that can replace the passion and the culture for the game. And I think they have that. And when you have that and then you add the other ingredients, you can really be dangerous. And I think, you know, Morocco's at that point where they have great players. They play good soccer. They're fun to watch. And you can tell they're having fun playing it, whether that's their senior team or their youth teams.
You know, what's interesting to me is they have a clear identity and it looked very similar from the under 20s to the full senior team. The identity seems really clear. It seems it's not a lot of mumbo jumbo. It seems very, very clear to both the under 20 team and the full national team as to how they play.
No question. They defend really well as a team. They're committed to their team. And then in attack, they have the freedom to do what they want. And you can tell. And that's a pleasure to see, no doubt.
Tab, tell my listeners what you've been up to. And we've told them before, but, you know, I never know with you. You might be on to something new that I don't know about. So tell us what you've been up to in the world of soccer.
Wow. Yeah, a bunch of things. So a couple of things that I can't discuss yet because they're in the works.
You know, also, you're like a chef who won't give us the secret ingredient.
Yeah, I think there'll be time for that. Maybe in about another month we can have another call and I can discuss more things. But at this point, you know, doing a lot of promotion for the World Cup, working closely with Bank of America, with Merrill Lynch, working on a podcast that's likely going to start next month, working on a school that potentially starts next September. So there's a lot of different things that are in the works right now that I'm really happy to be doing.
Exceptional soccer in America needs you involved in it at every level. So I thank you very much, as always, for coming on, Tab. I do say this all the time. We miss you in Houston. Well, I certainly miss you in Houston, that's for sure. And anyway, thanks for coming on the program tonight. Great stuff.
Yeah, and I'll say I miss Houston as well. I had a great time there, and I hope to be able to go back soon, and thank you for having me on.
Okay, that does it tonight for Destination 2026. You can get the podcast at ESPN975.com. You can also get it over at Apple Podcasts and Spotify Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. So thanks for tuning in here tonight. It's exciting times. The World Cup's coming. Again, I remind you, FWC26Houston.com. You can follow that on Instagram, but also you can go to the website, merchandise, all the information around the World Cup. You can also hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at GlenDavisSoc, at SoccerMattersGD. And until next week and next Tuesday in Soccer Matters, on behalf of Destination 2026 on ESPN 97.5 and producer Brian McDonald, I'm Glenn Davis. Have a great night, everyone. Yeah, yeah.